The Golden Bough. A Study of Magic and Religion. By Sir James George Frazer. This audiobook was produced by Klaus-Dieter Mond, Rastatt, Germany and is published under the conditions of the Gutenberg Organization. Chapter 22. Tabooed Words. Section 3. Names of the Dead tabooed. The custom of abstaining from all mention of the names of the dead was observed in antiquity by the Albanians of the Caucasus, and at the present day it is in full force among many savage tribes. Thus we are told that one of the customs most rigidly observed and enforced amongst the Australian Aborigines is never to mention the name of a deceased person, whether male or female. To name aloud one who has departed this life would be a gross violation of their most sacred prejudices, and they carefully abstain from it. The chief motive for this abstinence appears to be a fear of evoking the ghost, although the natural unwillingness to revive past sorrows undoubtedly operates also to draw the veil of oblivion over the names of the dead. Once Mr. Oldfield so terrified a native by shouting out the name of a deceased person, that the man fairly took to his heels and did not venture to show himself again for several days. At their next meeting he bitterly reproached the rash white man for his indiscretion. Nor could Roman one, adds Mr. Oldfield, induce him by any means to utter the awful sound of a dead man's name, for by so doing he would have placed himself in the power of the malign spirits. Among the Aborigines of Victoria the dead were very rarely spoken of, and then never by their names. They were referred to in a subdued voice as, the lost one, or, the poor fellow that is no more. To speak of them by name would, it was supposed, excite the malignity of Cowatjill, the spirit of the departed, which hovers on earth for a time before it departs forever towards the setting sun. Of the tribes on the Lower Merri River we are told that when a person dies, they carefully avoid mentioning his name. But if compelled to do so, they pronounce it in a very low whisper, so faint that they imagine the spirit cannot hear their voice. Amongst the tribes of Central Australia no one may utter the name of the deceased during the period of mourning, unless it is absolutely necessary to do so, and then it is only done in a whisper for fear of disturbing and annoying the man's spirit which is walking about in ghostly form. If the ghost hears his name mentioned he concludes that his kinsfolk are not mourning for him properly. If their grief were genuine they could not bear to bandy his name about. Touched to the quick by their hard-hearted indifference the indignant ghost will come and trouble them in dreams. The same reluctance to utter the names of the dead appears to prevail among all the Indian tribes of America from Hudson's Bay Territory to Patagonia. Among the Gojeras of Colombia to mention the dead before his kinsmen is a dreadful offence, which is often punished with death. For if it happens on the rancho of the deceased, in presence of his nephew or uncle, they will assuredly kill the offender on the spot if they can. But if he escapes, the penalty resolves itself into a heavy fine, usually of two or more oxen. A similar reluctance to mention the names of the dead is reported of peoples so widely separated from each other as the Samoyeds of Siberia and the Tadis of southern India, the Mongols of Tartary and the Tuaregs of the Sahara, the Ainus of Japan and the Akambang Nandi of eastern Africa, the Dinguyans of the Philippines and the inhabitants of the Nicobar Islands, of Borneo, of Madagascar, and of Tasmania. In all cases, even where it is not expressly stated, the fundamental reason for this avoidance is probably the fear of the ghost. That this is the real motive with the Tuaregs we are positively informed. They dread the return of the dead man's spirit, and do all they can to avoid it by shifting their camp after a death, ceasing forever to pronounce the name of the departed, and eschewing everything that might be regarded as an evocation or recall of his soul. Hence they do not, like the Arabs, designate individuals by adding to their personal names the names of their fathers. They never speak of so-and-so, son of so-and-so. They give to every man a name which will live and die with him. So among some of the Victorian tribes in Australia personal names were rarely perpetuated, because the natives believed that anyone who adopted the name of a deceased person would not live long. Probably his ghostly namesake was supposed to come and fetch him away to the spirit land. The same fear of the ghost, which moves people to suppress his old name, naturally leads all persons who bear a similar name to exchange it for another, lest its utterance should attract the attention of the ghost, who cannot reasonably be expected to discriminate between all the different applications of the same name. Thus we are told that in the Adelaide and Encounter Bay tribes of South Australia the repugnance to mentioning the names of those who have died lately is carried so far, that persons who bear the same name as the deceased abandon it, and either adopt temporary names or are known by any others that happen to belong to them. A similar custom prevails among some of the Queensland tribes. But the prohibition to use the names of the dead is not permanent, though it may last for many years. In some Australian tribes the change of name thus brought about is permanent. The old name is laid aside forever, and the man is known by his new name for the rest of his life, or at least until he is obliged to change it again for a like reason. Among the North American Indians all persons, whether men or women, who bore the name of one who had just died were obliged to abandon it and to adopt other names, which was formerly done at the first ceremony of mourning for the dead. In some tribes to the east of the Rocky Mountains this change of name lasted only during the season of mourning, but in other tribes on the Pacific coast of North America it seems to have been permanent. Sometimes by an extension of the same reasoning or the near relations of the deceased change their names, whatever they may happen to be, doubtless from a fear that the sound of the familiar names might lure back the vagrant spirit to its old home. Thus in some Victorian tribes the ordinary names of all the next of kin were discussed during the period of mourning, and certain general terms, prescribed by custom, were substituted for them. To call a mourner by his own name was considered an insult to the departed, and often led to fighting and bloodshed. Among Indian tribes of northwestern America near relations of the deceased often change their names, under an impression that spirits will be attracted back to earth if they hear familiar names often repeated. Among the Kiowa Indians the name of the dead is never spoken in the presence of the relatives, and on the death of any member of a family all the others take new names. This custom was noted by Raleigh's colonists on Roanoke Island more than 3 centuries ago. Among the Lemhi Indians not only is a dead man's name never mentioned, but all the survivors change their names also. They say that death has been among them and has carried off a list of the living, and that he will soon come back for more victims. Hence in order to defeat his fell purpose they change their names, believing that on his return death, though he has got them all on his list, will not be able to identify them under their new names, and will depart to pursue the search elsewhere. Nicobar's mourners take new names in order to escape the unwelcome attentions of the ghost. And for the same purpose they disguise themselves by shaving their heads so that the ghost is unable to recognize them. Further, when the name of the deceased happens to be that of some common object, such as an animal, or plant, or fire, or water, it is sometimes considered necessary to drop that word in ordinary speech and replace it by another. A custom of this sort, it is plain, may easily be a potent agent of change in language. For where it prevails to any considerable extent many words must constantly become obsolete and new ones spring up. And this tendency has been remarked by observers who have recorded the custom in Australia, America, and elsewhere. For example, with regard to the Australian Aborigines it has been noted that the dialects change with almost every tribe. Some tribes name their children after natural objects. And when the person so named dies, the word is never again mentioned. Another word has therefore to be invented for the object after which the child was called. The writer gives as an instance the case of a man whose name Kala signified fire. When Kala died, a new word for fire had to be introduced. Hence, adds the writer, the language is always changing. Again, in the Encounter Bay tribe of South Australia, if a man of the name of Nkled, which means water, were to die, the whole tribe would be obliged to use some other word to express water for a considerable time after his decease. The writer who records this custom surmises that it may explain the presence of a number of synonyms in the language of the tribe. This conjecture is confirmed by what we know of some Victorian tribes whose speech comprised a regular set of synonyms to be used instead of the common terms by all members of a tribe in times of mourning. For instance, if a man called Wa, Gro, departed this life, during the period of mourning for him nobody might call a crow Wa. Everybody had to speak of the bird as a Narapart. When a person who rejoiced in the title of Ringtail Opossum, Wern, had gone the way of all flesh, his sorrowing relations and the tribe at large were bound for a time to refer to Ringtail Opossums by the more sonorous name of Manoankert. If the community were plunged in grief for the loss of a respected female who bore the honorable name of Turkey Bustard, the proper name for turkey bustards, which was Barim Barim, went out, until Itilich came in. And so Mutatis Mutandis with the names of Black Cockatoo, Grey Duck, Gigantic Crane, Kangaroo, Eagle, Dingo, and the rest. A similar custom used to be constantly transforming the language of the Abipones of Paraguay, amongst whom, however, a word once abolished seems never to have been revived. New words, says the missionary Dobbershofer, sprang up every year like mushrooms in a night, because all words that resembled the names of the dead were abolished by proclamation and others coined in their place. The mint of words was in the hands of the old women of the tribe, and whatever term they stamped with their approval and put in circulation was immediately accepted without a murmur by high and low alike, and spread like wildfire through every camp and settlement of the tribe. You would be astonished, says the same missionary, to see how meekly the whole nation acquiesces in the decision of a withered old hag, and how completely the old familiar words fall instantly out of use and are never repeated either through force of habit or forgetfulness. In the 7 years that Dobbershofer spent among these Indians, the native word for jaguar was changed thrice, and the words for crocodile, thorn, and the slaughter of cattle underwent similar though less varied vicissitudes. As a result of this habit, the vocabularies of the missionaries teemed with erasures, old words having constantly to be struck out as obsolete and new ones inserted in their place. In many tribes of British New Guinea, the names of persons are also the names of common things. The people believe that if the name of a deceased person is pronounced, his spirit will return, and as they have no wish to see it back among them, the mention of his name is tabooed and a new word is created to take its place, whenever the name happens to be a common term of the language. Consequently, many words are permanently lost or revived with modified or new meanings. In the Nicobar Islands, a similar practice has similarly affected the speech of the natives. A most singular custom, says Mr. de Robsdorf, prevails among them which one would suppose must most effectually hinder the making of history, single quote, or, at any rate, the transmission of historical narrative. By a strict rule, which has all the sanction of Nicobar superstition, no man's name may be mentioned after his death. To such a length is this carried that when, as very frequently happens, the man rejoiced in the name of fowl, single quote, hat, fire, single quote, road, single quote, etc., in its Nicobarese equivalent, the use of these words is carefully eschewed for the future, not only as being the personal designation of the deceased, but even as the names of the common things they represent. The words die out of the language, and either new vocables are coined to express the thing intended, or a substitute for the deceased word is found in other Nicobarese dialects or in some foreign tongue. This extraordinary custom not only adds an element of instability to the language, but destroys the continuity of political life, and renders the record of past events precarious and vague, if not impossible. That a superstition which suppresses the names of the dead must cut at the very root of historical tradition has been remarked by other workers in this field. The Klamath people, observes Mr. I.S. Gatschit, possess no historic traditions going further back in time than a century, for the simple reason that there was a strict law prohibiting the mention of the person or acts of a deceased individual by using his name. This law was rigidly observed among the Californians no less than among the Oregonians, and on its transgression the death penalty could be inflicted. This is certainly enough to suppress all historical knowledge within a people. How can history be written without names? In many tribes, however, the power of this superstition to blot out the memory of the past is to some extent weakened and impaired by a natural tendency of the human mind. Time, which wears out the deepest impressions, inevitably dulls, if it does not wholly efface, the print left on the savage mind by the mystery and horror of death. Sooner or later, as the memory of his loved ones fades slowly away, he becomes more willing to speak of them, and thus their rude names may sometimes be rescued by the philosophic inquirer before they have vanished, like autumn leaves or winter snows, into the vast undistinguished limbo of the past. In some of the Victorian tribes, the prohibition to mention the names of the dead remained in force only during the period of mourning. In the Port Lincoln tribe of South Australia, it lasted many years. Among the Chinook Indians of North America, custom forbids the mention of a dead man's name, at least till many years have elapsed after the bereavement. Among the Puyallup Indians, the observance of the taboo is relaxed after several years, when the mourners have forgotten their grief. And if the deceased was a famous warrior, one of his descendants, for instance a great-grandson, may be named after him. In this tribe the taboo is not much observed at any time except by the relations of the dead. Similarly, the Jesuit missionary Lafitau tells us that the name of the departed and the similar names of the survivors were, so to say, buried with the corpse until, the poignancy of their grief being abated, it pleased the relations to lift up the tree and raise the dead. By raising the dead they meant bestowing the name of the departed upon someone else, who thus became to all intents and purposes a reincarnation of the deceased, since on the principles of savage philosophy the name is a vital part, if not the soul, of the man. Among the Laos, when a woman was with child and near the time of her delivery, a deceased ancestor or relation used to appear to her in a dream and inform her what dead person was to be born again in her infant, and whose name the child was therefore to bear. If the woman had no such dream, it fell to the father or the relatives to determine the name by divination or by consulting a wizard. Among the Kanza, birth is celebrated on the seventh day after the event by a feast given to the priest and to the whole village. To determine the child's name, the priest drops grains of rice into a cup of water, naming with each grain a deceased ancestor. From the movements of the seed in the water, and from observations made on the person of the infant, he pronounces which of his progenitors has reappeared in him, and the child generally, at least among the northern tribes, receives the name of that ancestor. Among the Yorubas, soon after a child has been born, a priest of Ifa, the god of divination, appears on the scene to ascertain what ancestral soul has been reborn in the infant. As soon as this has been decided, their parents are told that the child must conform in all respects to the manner of life of the ancestor who now animates him or her, and if, as often happens, they profess ignorance, the priest supplies the necessary information. The child usually receives the name of the ancestor who has been born again in him.